All right, welcome to a financial planning podcast with a down-to-earth vibe. Sasquatch listens while foraging and dodging trail cameras. This is Through the Pines. On this episode, we explore how to raise smart money kids. So, learning how to spend, save, and manage money, maintaining an emergency fund, understanding credit, compound interest, and living minimally. What about living maximally? That's what I would like to do. We cover these topics and more on this episode of Through the Pines. In the studio with us, this is exciting because, you know, normally these people got to call in from wherever they live and work, but we do have Rex Baxter and Brandon Smith in the studio from PlanWithBaxter.com, Forbes Best In-State Wealth Management Teams for Utah, Advisor Hub's fastest growing advisors to watch under $1 billion, and the receivers of the Ameriprise Client Experience Award, which means they know what they are talking about. So let's dive in, beginning with something that you did, Brandon, which was to reach out to your wife to figure out what people want to know about money, right? And so she put it out there on the Instagrams.
The old Instagram, Instagrams.
Yeah.
Well, and she had, because she's shared our podcast before and people have suggested content. And one of these was, you know, how to raise money smart kids. Mm. So she threw it out there against, all right, what questions do you have? What comments do you have? And and started the dialogue that way. And so right off the gate, what was overwhelming was, hey, I've got a bunch of kids and they're all different, right? Like I did the same thing with all my kids and they all turned out different. And so I think there's probably an appropriateness to starting disclosing that. I don't think there's any one thing you can do for your kids to just make them money geniuses. You know,
But we're talking about educating them about the basics of money, right? Like this is, and there's some sort of core properties, I guess, that people need to know. Rex?
Lots of kids. They're all different. Everybody has a different solution.
End of podcast. Well, it's true.
I'm just joking.
But yeah, what should they know? I think is what we're going to dive into today.
Right. And I think even if you've got kids that are predisposed to spending every dollar they ever earn, or some that are, you know, into saving, I think this information can help all of them. Even if you're a saver, I've come across a lot of people who are savers, but that aren't doing it maybe the most efficient way possible. Mm. Or people who are just to spend every dollar, but can implement a few things that will dramatically benefit their financial life. And so I think these will help going through that.
Okay, so kind of cover these first things. There's predisposed to making poor or wise financial decisions.
Yes.
I think kids are, right?
Yeah.
Obviously I have more kids than the two of you combined.
Wait a minute.
I'm pretty sure, but they are all different. And they do have, I mean, it's a nature versus nurture discussion. And so they do have some sort of predisposition to handle money, or how they handle money and the way that they want to spend, the way that they want to save. And I think as parents, and those people around them, aunts, uncles, you know, whatever the case may be, I think we can influence those things. I think we can educate and teach. I think that they are all different. And yet I also think that there's some things that kind of put the odds in your favor, if you will, in trying to raise money-aware kids.
Yeah, we came up with really five core principles that I'm excited for. The first one is learning how to spend, save, and manage your money, right? Because it's not all about just saving. It's about your relationship.
It's about spending, you know.
It's your relationship with money. The second one, maintaining an emergency fund is important. Understanding credit is the third one. Compounding interest, both for borrowing and investing. And then finally, how to live minimally. And kind of the idea is that if we can get these five concepts at least somewhat in place, that you have a really, really good shot at a healthy relationship with money as you go into your early adult years.
Okay, so I think everyone should bookmark this podcast right now, because this is going to be some good information on how to teach your kids about money. Let's go with the first of your core values here, learning how to spend and save and manage money. What do you mean by learning how to spend? Like, we don't know how to spend money?
You know how to spend money, but do you know how to spend money wisely? Right? And do you know how to spend, how to make good money spending decisions?
Okay.
Would be the question, I think. And so in a way, I almost draw a little bit of a parallel between this and food in a way. So stay with me here for
a
second.
It. Yeah.
Right. But when I was young, we didn't grow up with a lot. And so a treat to me was like cold cereal. As I was growing up, loved Fruit Loops, loved Cookie Crisp, loved, you know, there are a couple of cereals that just loved. And when we would go camping.
Honeycombs? Maybe?
No. Not so much.
Lucky Charms?
Did like Lucky Charms. I liked the marshmallows. Who didn't like the marshmallows? So as we would go camping or something, that was something that my mom would put in the camper trailer as a treat or something like that. And then as I got a paper route and I was starting to earn my own money, on like a Saturday morning after my route, you know, I'd run over to the gas station and buy my own cereal and hide it in my bedroom.
Yeah. Kind
of
thing,
right? Because I was the youngest of six and I didn't want any of my brothers and sisters to steal my cereal, right?
Yeah.
But as I grew up, because that was something that was withheld from me, I still love that. And I still like cold cereal. I don't eat it very often because it's not very healthy, but I still really, really like it because I couldn't have it.
Mm.
And I think on money, it's the same kind of concept that if you don't talk about it, if you don't teach them those kinds of things, then all of a sudden, I think that they're going to crave that spending. So sometimes we have some families that are like, oh yeah, I don't let them spend anything. I rule their wallet with an iron fist. It goes into a bank account. Yes, they can earn money. No, they can't spend it. And I think that sometimes that builds up this demand, this internal drive to spend money. And when they get it finally, because they've got this enormous pent-up drive to do that.
Yeah.
I think there's things like that as we're raising our kids, that we need to be aware of how that can react and the repercussions of that 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road.
And spending money wisely is a skill. And wisely, I think, in my definition, would be if you look back over the past 5 years of your life, are you happy with the financial purchases that you made? Mm. And that doesn't mean that it all needs to go into investment. Of course not, right? If you did that, I think you'd be disappointed that you maybe missed out on some of life. And so can you look back and say, yeah, in hindsight, I did the right thing?
What about these kids who see Ma and Dad living large? And then they graduate college and they get, or not, and they graduate high school, but they start working and they're immediately think that they should, maybe not as recently now because the housing market is tough, but they should have all the things, right? They should have a nice car and go on vacations and have a house, but it takes way too long to get there these days and they got to have patience. How do you teach that?
I think I see that the most though, when there's a lack of communication around money. And so I think if you're raising your kids and you're showing them how much you're making and you're talking to them about how much you're spending on a car, so they can kind of draw that parallel of, oh, Dad's spending 10% of his income on a car and I'm making, you know, I'm coming out of college and I'm making 50 grand. Well, my 10% is 5 grand, you know, and so, you know, maybe I need a beater because that's the same relationship that my dad had in their car relationship, right? He just makes more and so he can afford a little bit better. And as my income grows, I can afford a better car. But if you talk through that with your kids and you have those active discussions, then they can learn and they'll retain more than you think. Some won't always act on what they retain.
Well, acting Well, first step is the coaching and teaching though.
Right.
So, okay.
And I think taking ownership of it too. I remember when I was a kid, I was a natural saver. I had this little funny briefcase I got from somewhere, you know, had my little passcode was 029. I still remember that.
Wow.
I don't use that for anything, but that was the passcode. And so I'd like flip the little things and open it up and I'd count my money. And I was anyway, so I like loved to save it. But then I remember I wanted a mountain bike. I was 14, right? And we were doing this big mountain bike activity. And so I wanted a mountain bike. I told my parents, hey guys, I think I need a better mountain bike. They're like, well, you can go buy one, you know, and we'll match half of it, which was really kind of cool. And I still remember being at this bike shop and I was so indecisive, but I'm just like going back before the guys like telling me the difference between this bike and this bike. And I'm looking at it and I rode that bike literally until a couple of years ago. I bought it, loved it, replaced the rims and everything a million times because I kept bending stuff. But that bike, like it meant a lot to me because it was my money. But I also like, I remember in my head, I was like, $1 is equal to $2, right? I can, this is kind of a good deal, you know? And so I think helping kids, and the same was true. I enjoyed snowboarding in high school, but I had to buy all my own stuff, but I love snowboarding, but I self-regulated. I don't think this is because I'm amazing. I think this is because it was just like my surrounding, right? I created a rule for myself. I would only buy a board if it was half off. Right. I realized the cost of it was so extreme. If I could get last season's board or whatever, I bought that to preserve my money. And I think that skill went with me into adulthood of being maybe a little bit slower to purchase and a little bit more cautious.
What about allowances, Rex?
I'm open to receiving allowances.
I am too. Yes. Yes. I have a Venmo. So, yeah.
No, I think allowances are okay. Right. A lot of people give allowances. I think limiting at some age, moving from allowance to earning money through chores or earning money through things is very helpful.
I'm sort of the opposite, where it's like, there's some work that you need to do because you live here and you don't get money for it. It's, you just pitch in because that's your job. Is
right.
Well, I think there's some of those too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got some of those that just, they need to help with dishes or take the garbage out or clean your room or, you know, help around the yard.
And then over and above that, you've got things you actually get paid for. And when they reach a certain age.
Right. Okay. Like special projects, right? I need the cupboards all wiped, cleaned out and wiped out.
Right.
Occasionally.
We have a standing job list, and not that it's, I mean, it's always a work in progress, but we've got a standing job list of, hey, here are all the things you can do for a dollar. Here's all the things you can do for $2. And our kids are young, so a dollar goes a ways. And the job they're doing isn't, I don't feel bad, but it's
not
like,
not always the highest quality.
Right, right. But it teaches them, right? Like they'll come up. Yeah. My youngest son, Max, is always wants sharks, right? I want to buy a shark. I'm like, well, where's your money? You know, he's like, I found a lucky dime. And it's like, well, you're going to need more than that, buddy. You know?
Yeah.
And so we'll like draw out a paper and be like, here's 10 boxes. Once you check that, you'll have $10. That'll buy you a pretty good shark. And I think that's been helpful. And for me, I don't want me or my wife to ever be the enemy. I don't want to be the one that tells my kids no. I want to be the one that says, yeah, go get it. Like, I think go get another shark. I think that'd be fun, but here's what you got to do to get it. And setting those clear parameters so that I can step out of it as a parent and let them decide that life balance, work-life balance.
Yeah, I think there's things like that that we've done from time to time too. But a lot of ours, so my youngest now is 11, turning 12 tomorrow. And
happy birthday.
Thank you.
To the youngest.
Okay.
To my
blue-haired girl.
Mine was yesterday, so they're right next to.
They are right next to each other. Last week, one of my daughters wanted to watch a movie. And so she, you know, had to. She was getting her hair done, and it's because it's colored and it's long. It's like a 2 or 3 or 4 hour process, right? It's a big old long process. And so she wanted to be able to watch a movie. And in this case, it happened to be a movie that cost money. And I said, look, you know, we've got Netflix or Hulu or all these other movies. Go pick a movie. I don't want to pay for a movie.
I'm not paying $2.99 to rent this
thing. Well, this was like $20.
Oh,
snap. Right? This was like a new release movie, yeah. Right?
Okay.
And so I was like, I don't want to spend my money on that. But if you want to spend your money on that, that's just fine. And so she kind of thought about it and she wanted to spend her money on that. And I'm great with that. That's just fine. I don't have, you know, she earned it. And that's just fine. I had her think about it, and that's just fine. And I'm good with her doing that. She saves, on the other hand. And so the money that isn't going into savings, absolutely she should enjoy. She should use it in the ways that she wants. And that's just fine. Now, on the other hand, I had bought her a pair of tap shoes because my girls dance. And they're fairly regular black tap shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
And here we are at a dance convention, and they've got these suede.
Oh, I'm talking about,
you know, kind of, you know, pattern.
Yeah,
it's got these little red
dance
heart,
dance
this big red heart tap shoe on it, and she comes up to me and she's like, "Dad, you know how much better I can dance with these shoes.
You turn pro with the right shoes, you
know? Right?" Yeah. And I'm like, "Yeah, the shoes don't make the girl, honey," and she's like, "Oh, but it would boost my confidence. And if my confidence
is up,
she
knows how to work it, yeah.
And I get a scholarship to this nationals. Dad, this actually saves you money." That's where she went with that, right?
This saves you money.
I love it, yeah.
And so I said no. But if she wanted, but they were expensive, right? And so if she wanted to spend her money on it, then that would be fine. She didn't have quite enough. And I said, "That's fine. We'll float you the rest, but you're going to have to work off the rest from some other chores when we get home next week sometime, if you want to do that." If she does that, we kind of have a credit discussion that that is how credit. I don't charge them interest or make them do an extra chore. Just, you know, I don't go that far, but we do have that kind of discussion right there.
Brandon?
I think in my mind, to summarize this section, I think childhood is about gaining experience in a controlled environment, right? So that you don't end up buried in credit card debt because you bought the tap shoes. It gives you the experience to learn how to deal with money. And as parents, if we step in and take away natural consequences, we do kids a disservice. But if we can allow them to buy, to experience, not to overprotect them, right? Sometimes they need to get some self-inflicted pain by buying something that they probably didn't want to buy, but let them learn and get those experiences. I think that's really the purpose of this stage of childhood.
Well, and then lastly, you've mentioned this multiple times on a lot of the podcasts. You guys have said to pay yourself first and make it automatic.
Yep.
So that goes into the spending, saving, and managing money is teaching yourself to pay yourself first and making it automatic.
Yeah, I think especially in the teen years, Rex is really good at that.
Yeah, so we do that as soon as they start to earn money. Even with our young kids, if they're doing a bunch of chores or they come into some money, some birthday money or a couple hundred bucks or something like that, we still have them save a certain amount of that into a kiddie account and peel that off the top and have that saved, mm-hmm. just to build in that habit really, really young. Mm-hmm. And but we have discussions
how much
about
do you
that too.
10%?
Yeah, typically we have them save about 10%.
Okay.
As they get older, and so as my kids get into their later teens and into their early 20s, lots of times we get it up to 15 or even 20 because they're saving for very specific things, right? Mm-hmm. And so they might be saving 10% for long-term goals, but we might be saving another 10% for a vehicle or another 15% on top of that for a house or something like that. And so we're saving additional funds in addition. So
okay. Additional funds in addition.
Yeah. You like that?
I like that. Yeah.
Smooth.
Maintaining an emergency fund. Okay. I don't know, you know, when kids need to learn this, but having an emergency fund is huge. And what's the parameters that the emergency fund should be figured out, I guess, around, Brandon?
Yeah, so typically, you know, as an adult, it's 3 to 6 months of expenses.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a good rule of thumb. Yeah, for kids, it's
3 to 6 months of chores.
Right, right. They don't have those expenses, yeah. But it's still good to get a slush fund and get in the habit of always having money, because I think it makes you think differently. If you, as a kid, anytime you get money, you're just running out to buy it because you don't know how to handle money and you're just so excited to have money, you have to go buy something. That's a whole different mindset than if you're a kid and you have a slush fund, even if it's only 20, 30, 40 bucks, right? But when you can walk into the store as a child and practice those self-disciplines of, hey, I could buy that toy right now if I wanted, but I'm going to hold off for now. And so if you can help kids get that slush fund and learn how to handle emotionally having money but not spending it, I think for me, I think that's what kind of an emergency fund as childhood should look like.
Okay.
I tend to focus on the emergency fund with my kids a little more heavily when they start to get a regular job. And so if they're getting a W-2 or a 1099, something like that, to where it's a regular job, then I really start to focus in on that emergency fund.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I've done that is after they've received checks for about 2 months, then we go back and we look at their bank account for the last 2 months and we see what they're spending. And we see, you know, how much are you spending on food? How much are you spending on entertainment? How much are you spending on a couple of these things, whatever they are? Okay, well, that's how much I want in your emergency fund is 3 times that. Just because, I want to build that habit.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're spending $300 a month on food and fun and whatever, then I want $900 in that emergency fund.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to build that habit really early and really young, because it'll stay with them typically for their lives. And so all of my kids that are now earning income, I feel like do a really good job of maintaining their emergency funds. And I feel like that's where it came from.
Yeah, that would have been nice to know as a kid. that was a lesson I didn't know for a long time.
Are you still learning?
But, no, I'm very, yeah, thank you. I actually don't do mentally well without some money in the, like, I feel like I have to have money. I have to have, especially now because I'm self-employed. And so it's like, well, I don't know when you have, and maybe that is where adults get into trouble, is they just get so used to the paycheck coming in and the money coming in that it's almost like, well, I get another check next Friday, so who cares, you know, where oh man, if you're self-employed, that's not how it works. And you're hypercritical on how much money do I have in the bank and stuff.
It's really easy to justify what an emergency is. Right. And true. So, yeah. I mean, is an emergency going to an NBA basketball game because you've got an opportunity and you can get some tickets fairly cheap? That's right. Not what an emergency.
Totally worth it.
It's... So, you know, it's interesting.
So understanding what an emergency is, not on here, but totally get that one. So there's the typical expenses of 3 to 6 months is the first thing there. And then what about understanding credit? When do you start teaching kids about credit, Rex?
Well, so if you don't mind me jumping in on this. So this was one that was interesting. We had a couple comments on just my wife's Instagram. One person said that they went out and helped their child buy a car. I'm assuming they co-signed on a loan for a car to help build the kid's credit. Obviously, I'm sure they're like a teenager, right? Hopefully. And then another person said they got a credit card for their kid. And I thought that was really interesting because, I mean, you can build points on that. You can build credit on that. It's obviously kind of a dangerous world, but she said, you know, and I think this, and she mentioned that the kid was a real saver. So maybe that was, they felt safe doing that. But I thought those were, I'd be curious, Rex's and your thoughts on that. I mean, co-signing for a child's car, credit cards to build credit, good idea, bad idea?
Bad idea.
You think so? All the way around?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of co-signing on loans. And so my kids know this, that I'm not going to co-sign on a car or a house or a trip to Hawaii or, you know.
what if they don't have credit or any way?
Well, I'll give you an example of how I built credit. When I got my first job, the first thing to do was save enough money to buy a car. And it was like $300, like really cheap. And I had saved $300 in the bank and then went to the bank and took a loan out against the $300 to start building credit. Yeah. And then they gave me like a Visa card for $500 or something. And I went and bought a TV for my room.
Okay.
That was like it was like $50 or something at the time. So I then paid $10 a month on that and that. But that taking the loan out against my shares was how I bought the first car. And then I had to slowly build up the amount of money because the credit was like just like $300, and then the next car was like $1,500 or something. So, right. but there are ways to do it without getting co-signing. And stuff.
So the way I started was I took out a secured loan. So essentially, I had $500 in a savings account. So they gave me a $500 signature loan, right, and held that as collateral. And so I kept that out and paid it back over the next 2 or 3 months and got it paid off. And then I did one for $1,000 and got that paid off over the next 3 months or so. And then I just kind of stopped as I was growing. I did get it at that point. I did get a small credit card for like $100 to build up a little bit more credit.
Do you remember my green car? That was the $300 one.
Was it really?
It would make it to Weber State, but it wouldn't make it home.
Oh, if you pushed it halfway, it'd make it to Weber State.
Yeah, but it was cool because you could literally lay out. It was like as wide as these camper seats. I mean, the thing was enormous. But,
Do you remember my like orange Mercury thing that didn't have a stereo in it? Is that my sister?
Stereo's luxury there.
Yeah, yeah. I had to have like, this will date me, but a Walkman next to me, and I'd have the headphones next to me turned up full bore, so I'm getting like this fuzzy headphone mix.
Oh man, it's so bad.
It was terrible because I couldn't afford a stereo in it.
But that's what you do, is take loans out against like the shares or the money in your bank.
Yeah, so that's what we did. With our kids, what we've done is, again, once they've gotten a job, then typically we have them get a small card, a credit card. We'll have them make a gas purchase on it and pay that off on the next statement period. And typically we'll have them do that maybe 2 or 3 times a year. And that should be sufficient to then get a credit line increase and so forth, depending upon the company that you're dealing with. And so that's what we would do so that then they could afford to start to get the credit built for a house, so at least they've got something established. Mm-hmm. But we also have really candid discussions about how does that interest compound? How much is that? And we almost have the Warren Buffett discussions, right? You've probably heard the story about his son. I can't remember what he wanted to buy. I was trying to remember that this morning in preparation for this. I swear it was like a boombox or a Walkman or something like that as far as Warren's son. It may have even been a TV, but anyhow, they went and they looked at it and it was like $40 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Right. And here you are dealing with one of the wealthiest people in the world. He may not have been one of the wealthiest at that time, but he had plenty at that point.
He had enough to buy a TV.
He had enough to buy a TV. And so his son went to buy it, and he's like, now, son, let's think about this. This $40, if we compound that at 10% per year, and here you are at age 17 or whatever the age was, you know, when you're 65, you know, this is a $400,000 TV. Yeah. Does this TV look like a $400,000? You know, and he just guilted the crap out of him, you know? So needless to say, there was no TV purchase. I haven't gone that route very often. I mean, I've done it once or twice with kind of their savings, just so that they understand what it takes to become a millionaire at different ages, as far as their savings and how that 10% compounds, and kind of reinforce that. And then we have discussions about up markets and down markets, because, you know, it's been a volatile 20 years, right? We had the decade of no return from 2000 to 2010. We had the great, you know, recession of 2008 and 9. And then we had COVID in 20. We've had, you know, 22 was a terrible year. And so we've had all of these periods, and because they're young and these are their first investment experiences, it's this generation, it's really easy for them to be really good savers and really easy for them to be really poor investors. Mm. And I want to bridge that gap, especially with my kids, so that they understand the difference and they understand the compounding of that interest in over time for them.
Well, the compounding of interest was the next subject
yeah.
there. So
one quick thing on credit before we go there. I think people's excitement to build credit is maybe a little bit overdone sometimes. I remember when we bought our first house, we had a line of credit at the bank that we would use, and then it was just set to auto pay it off every month. I don't think we even paid any interest on it. It would just kind of dip into that line of credit, pay it off every month. And that built our credit. And literally we had two credit cards that we had open but didn't have, literally never even used. And then my wife, fortunately, had one like Perks credit card that she had used and paid off a couple times. Mm-hmm. And that was the depth and extent of our credit. We had great credit scores and we didn't have any issue, you know, getting a loan. And I'm not saying necessarily go that narrow on credit, but it also doesn't need to be where you start when you're 16 and you start building up this crazy score, right? Like, I wouldn't pay a bunch of credit card and car loan interest in the name of building credit. Mm. There's a lot easier ways to do that.
There's certainly some people that think credit is a farce, right? There's a radio host that shall remain nameless, right? That says don't ever take out credit. And I'm not in that camp, right? I think that there are certain things that it's okay to borrow money for. A house, education within limitations with some pretty strong guide rails, your first vehicle sometimes in today's world, but it better not be a brand new Ford F-150, right?
No, it should be a Jeep.
Or it shouldn't be a Tesla either. If it's a Jeep, if it's like a 1990 Jeep, 19, you know, 95 or something, that's great. Those shouldn't be too much.
It's amazing, though, how the appetites change when you're going to buy it cash versus credit. You know, when you think you can finance, then you start, well, it's a good car. It'll get me. Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy, the thought process versus if you actually have the cash.
You know, another thing that's interesting with kids that I've done on occasions is just as a test, I would give them a $100 bill at the beginning of a month and not say anything to them because they'd earned their chores or whatever. And so they'd earned that $100, but I'd give it to them in a $100 bill.
$100 for chores? Man, now I'm feeling bad for my $1. Anyway, go on.
They did a lot of chores.
It was a lot of chores. I mean, we have a lot of cars that need to be washed. We have a lot of chores, right? Yeah. And so anyhow, but not say anything to them and then see how long that takes for them to break it and spend it. And it was a long time. I mean, it was multiple months, lots of times for that $100 bill. And then another example is I'd give them, you know, instead of that, I'd give them 25s, 20 $5 bills, right? Still $100.
Yeah, right.
And oh my gosh, that was gone in like 2 weeks.
Really? Yeah.
Right.
That's
and,
cool.
And it's the psychology of it, that of how painful it is to spend a bigger dollar amount.
Right.
When it's right there faced in front of you. Mm. And so it's just kind of an interesting experiment that you might try with your kids.
That's why debit cards are getting in trouble with
that. Yeah, so for real. Because it's like the extreme of that.
So easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So easy on debit cards.
But so convenient.
All right, moving on. Let's talk about this compounding interest. And you have an example in here, but Brandon, what did you want to introduce?
Yeah, so...
One, it's a good thing.
Yeah, yes. Well, it's a good thing if it's working for you. Bad thing if it's working against you. And I think that's what you want to be able to teach your kids, right? Like, is show. And sometimes examples are the best way to do that. I'll teach that with my kids all the time. Like, hey, if you are carrying $10,000, and obviously they aren't, but just real life examples, right? If someone has $10,000 of credit card interest at 20%, they're paying X amount of dollars every month just for the privilege of having credit card debt. You know, they're not buying more stuff, they don't get more, and helping them understand that. And then on the other side, helping them understand just how valuable money is. The trick with kids, though, is because that Warren Buffett example, such a good example, right? And in fact, I even did an example of that, right? If you have $10,000 at the age of 18, you invest that at 8.5%, that turns into $535,000 at age 65.
Without adding a dime.
Without adding a dime. Just put it, invest it, 8.5%, you're at $500,000. Is 10 grand worth $500,000? Like putting that into perspective, I think helps you, because is that the best place to put it? Maybe, maybe not though, right? Take that 10,000, put it into a higher education that can get you a job that's going to get you that $500,000 a lot faster, right? That might be a much better place to put it. And so the problem with being young is there's just so much. What about a real estate purchase, right? If you take that 10,000 and use it to get into maybe a duplex that you can live in one half and rent it. I mean, there's a lot of really, when you're young, the opportunity cost is so high on every dollar. Mm. And so helping kids understand that, hey, this is like every dollar that you have. And truthfully, also every year of life that you have is so valuable in these upfront. And that's not to say you shouldn't have fun. That's not to say you shouldn't have hobbies, but also understand, let's not get carried away because you have a lot of opportunity here.
I think one of the problems with regarding compound interest is that a lot of people just don't understand it. Or if they do understand it, it took them, you know, into their 30s to understand it, instead of when they're in their teens or when they're young and starting to understand how that interest is computed. And so it was interesting. The other day I saw an advertisement for a payday loan as an extreme example. And so somebody could get $500.
I swear these things should be illegal, but.
Right. But they could get $500. For a week, pay it off on their next payday, and it only cost them $50.
Yeah.
So that's 10% interest per week.
Right.
That you're having to pay is what that is.
Yeah, you gotta really need the money. And I don't know what
you
get.
You annualize that, man, right? Yeah. And it's like 5,000%. I mean, all of a sudden you're never gonna get that thing paid off. Mm. Right. And so I think going through examples of how compound interest works for you and against you in the same sit-down discussion is really important, because it will help them draw the parallels at the same time, as opposed to doing for you and then 6 months later doing against you. It doesn't have the same emotional impact on your kids as doing it at the same time and showing them side by side, because some kids are visual and some kids aren't visual. Some kids are number-oriented. And so that way you're covering both, right? You're covering visual and number oriented kids. And so that's what I would suggest.
I think that makes sense. And credit cards, like, there's nothing wrong with using credit cards as long as you do it right. We do. We have a credit card with perks on it, and we just pay it off, have it set to automatically just draw from our bank account every month. We pay it off. And because I don't trust credit cards, I scan that statement. Like, is there a penny of interest paid? And as long as I'm not paying any interest, and I'm getting a good perk back, I mean, that's a net positive for sure.
Net positives are good. Okay, should kids start saving into specific accounts? Like, what type of savings plans? Roth IRAs, 529s, UTMAs, etc.
Yeah, for sake of time, let's just fly through this really quick. So Roth IRAs are really beneficial, and a lot of people will do that. The thing is, the kids, and I think we talked about this in the last podcast, the child needs to have earned income. And so, and reported earned income, right, on a tax return. And so if they've got that, then we can go ahead and we can fund a Roth IRA. The benefit is that grows completely tax-free, and it's tax-free in retirement. So going back to our age 18 example, now how much more powerful is that if that $10,000 is also turned into $535,000 tax-free. Mm-hmm. I mean, $500,000 of tax-free money, that stretches so far. And so if we can utilize like a Roth IRA to do that, that can be highly beneficial. The downside is the Roth IRA really isn't built for midlife distributions. You know, there's some ways we can kind of finagle around it and whatnot, but really a Roth IRA is a retirement account. And so going back to the example of what's more valuable, $500,000 in retirement or $10,000 towards an education or something like that, right? You got to weigh the pros and cons of what is this money for. But a Roth IRA, we have clients that do that, and it can work out really well if you've got extra money to really go towards retirement. The other one's a 529 account. Can be really beneficial. The downside to a 529 is it has to be used for education. Now, recently there was just a new, you know, law change that allows a one-time lifetime conversion of $35,000 from a 529 that wasn't used into a Roth IRA. But again, that's pushing it off to long-term money. 529s just are so restrictive in that you can only really use them for education expenses. The other account that we see a lot of is a UTMA account, Uniform Transfer to Minor Act account. These are far more flexible. The accounts can, you can, if you have the money, you can use it for anything, right? For weddings, cars, education, whatever it is that you want to do. The downside is that it's flexible, right? And as the child comes of age, right, that becomes their money and it's not as restrictive. It's like a pro and a con, you know? Mm-hmm. And then finally, just a bank account. Sometimes it just works better. Even though these 529s or UTMAs or Roth IRAs will give us some tax savings, sometimes just having that full flexibility and liquidity makes sense. And so those are kind of high level, some of the accounts that are worth considering.
I think as you're looking at those different accounts, I think the phrase that comes to my mind is the juice worth the squeeze? So meaning that are the benefits of what you're getting from that account worth the costs or the restrictive pieces of those accounts? And so a lot of accounts will have different costs, whether it's an account, you know, maintenance fee, whether it's an investment fee, whether it's, you know, these different costs. And so if you're dealing, a lot of times it's interesting, right? We'll have a young family come and talk to us and they'll be like, hey, I've got, you know, $700 saved up for my kid. What should I do with that? Well, certainly we can open up some of these accounts, but the fee might be $50 a year or $100 a year. And on $750, that's such a big percentage that you're not going to overcome that. Mm. And so sometimes it makes sense to save this up in high yield savings accounts and different places, even though you might be giving up a little bit in the return, because the costs are so much lower, your in your pocket return is significantly more. Mm. And so you want to make sure that you're weighing that out versus what the costs are.
All right, moving on to the last of these
pillars of wealth. Five core values of
smart money kids.
Yeah, that's right.
How about that?
Five core values of smart money kids.
I like this last one though. How to live minimally.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, and maybe it's because I've got a good background in this.
Does that mean I only get one shirt?
Yes. No, I think, and Rex, actually, you were the one that suggested this as one of the, and I think you couldn't be more spot on.
One good idea a year.
Yeah.
Just one.
The reason being is if you pop out of high school and you've got all these other, you understand what you, but if you don't know how to live minimally for a minute, unless you've got a significant amount of money flowing to you, it's going to be a rough ride. And I think maybe a better title would be how to live minimally and still find joy and have fun. Because I think that's important. If you're not enjoying life, like things kind of tend to fall apart. And so I've got to preface this because our poor society doesn't emphasize it enough. Money can enrich lives, but it can really help your life, right? It can reduce your month-to-month financial stress, not worried about making bills and doing things like that. It can increase your life experiences, right? You can go out and do and experience more in the world. It can help you help others. It can give you more flexibility because now instead of trying to do an oil change myself, I can hire someone else to do it, right? Like, right. And so money is a really, really positive thing that we don't talk about enough in society because we try and like go the other way so far. With that said though, you can have an incredibly fulfilling and joyful life without money. And I think if you can understand that and figure that out, that is what's required to live minimally. So for me, I went to college, right? And I was putting myself through college and got married right away. And then we're like, hey, we like kids. It'd be fun to have a kid, right? I don't know how I didn't put this together, but all of a sudden we're like, whoa, how are we going to pay for this, right? There's expenses. There's now my wife isn't working. You know, we've got the kid. I mean, it's just not, it's not easy. And so we had a 4 years and then some, right, of really, really, really lean years. When I think back to my college days, though, I was working a lot. I was, you know, working like 3 jobs and going to school full time. But man, we had a lot of fun. I still had that old mountain bike that I told you about, right? I had that up at college. I'd go up in the mountains sometimes and grab a quick ride. We went camping, and now we love camping in our, you know, we take our truck and our trailer, and it's so fun. But man, back then we just packed up this teeny little, it was a little like seafoam green Chevy Aveo. This teeny little car, we just pack up this tent that we found at the DI, right, at a thrift store, and we just go set that up just about every weekend and go camping in that. I bought an old, or it wasn't old, it was a new RC airplane, but it didn't have all the parts for the inside, and so I went and found an old RC plane that I like took parts and put it together, and I was into that plane like $100. And then every time it broke, I just like hot glue it back together, right? I made sure it was one that I could just keep fixing over and over. And I look back at those days, and they were such good days, like so many good memories. But I look at how much we spent, and it was almost nothing, mm-hmm. right? $100 compared to, you know, you get a lot of hobbies, you buy a side by side, and those things, they cost a lot in and of themselves, and that's not necessarily bad. But if it, like, you go through a belt, you're $300 to buy a new belt. That's assuming you put it on yourself. The caliber of hobbies you've got to be careful on, right? You want to spend time on a lake? Go buy a boat? Holy smokes. Every time you turn around, you're throwing another couple $100 at that boat just to kind of maintain it. Or you go buy a paddleboard for a couple $100 and spend the whole summer on the lake on a paddleboard, and you don't worry about the financial ramifications. And so I think living minimally is super important. And that's not to say it's bad to spend money and have expensive hobbies, because I think those are a next level of fun. But you can also have a tremendous amount of fun living on very little.
I think there's two levels a little bit, or two different ways of living minimally. Obviously, as we were first married and had a number of kids, we didn't have very much either. And so I remember, you know, my kids will all share this story and they'll laugh about it today. But at the time, the oven had gone out. And so we got this big old pot. We probably put in, and again, we have a lot of kids, right? But we put in like 10 packs of ramen noodles, right, into this big old pot. And that's what we had for dinner, right? And so we had a big old Tupperware bowl, and we're all just kind of family style eating out of the big old pot, because oven was broken, couldn't afford it. Matter of fact, it's that kind of oven that's in the trailer right now. You can't see it, but it's an old style, built-in, you know, 24-inch oven. But that was out of necessity. I think the other way to live minimally, which can be dangerous, and I think you need to be aware of a little bit, is if you have one spouse that's living very, very minimally and keeping really tight purse strings on the money, and so the other spouse feels like they're going without, that they have the money, they can see the money, they just can't touch it. And I think that this, just like me as a kid with the cold cereal, same kind of thing here, to where you've got that pent up demand, to where all of a sudden it just combusts and spending gets out of control that quick, because it's not out of necessity. It's out of one person kind of being a little more controlling than the other. Mm. And I think that can turn into a really dangerous situation. But I think showing your kids and having those minimalist discussions about, you know, let's enjoy the lake, whether it's on a paddleboard, or for me personally, I just like to skip rocks. So, you know, I'll go out and I really do just like to skip rocks. And so, you know, I've never owned a boat. I don't have any real intention of ever owning a boat. And, but I love the water. But I would rather rent a boat for a weekend than use it once a year and own it and have all the maintenance and repairs and everything, because I'm just not that into it. Now, some of you are, and I understand that and I respect that, and that's great. As long as you've got that in perspective for your finances.
But that's also where financial planning, because you were right, Rex. I mean, if you have one spouse that's just super controlling, one that just wants to spend, I mean, the tension that creates in a marriage is extreme. And I've seen that where financial planning will take that away.
But
right?
The kids see that. The kids
absolutely.
Feel it. The kids see it. And unfortunately, what happens on the kid level typically is they feel the pent up demand from the spouse that's not able to spend, not the saving spouse. And for whatever reason, I've seen that time and time again, to where they take on the attributes of the pent-up demand. And so that way they feel like when they get a dollar, they're going to hurry and spend it because they saw dad or mom or whoever has the tight purse strings keep a clamp on it. And they're afraid that somebody is going to enter their life that's going to keep a clamp on it. And all of a sudden they start spending it. And so I think two pieces here. One is open communication, make sure that we're all on the same page when we're working with our kids. But two, understand the repercussions of intentional minimalism versus necessity minimalism, if you will, and how that makes sure that, you know, we're all moving in the same direction here.
I've seen the opposite too, where one spouse was just a spender and was more dominant and just spent, while the other one was just terrified the whole time. And then their kids, as they came into adulthood, they had just overwhelming saving tendencies, right? To an maybe an unhealthy level, right? Where they're just so scared of being that person that spent too much. And so I think that is where, truly, that's where the financial plan can really help people's lives get back together and say, and I've had countless of these discussions with spouses, right? Where one wants to spend and one is way too tight, and helping them find that middle ground of helping the spender be able to spend, but within reason, and the saver still save, knowing that they're on track, but able to let loose a little bit. And usually finding that middle ground can take a lot of tension out of a marriage.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that, and it's not always this way, but that the majority of the time the kids take on the trait of the non-dominant parent in regards to money. So if the dominant parent has the tight purse strings, typically they take on the non-dominant of the spending habits. If the dominant parent is the spender, then typically they'll take on the traits of the non-dominant, which is the saver.
Interesting.
And so it's kind of an interesting dynamic that's going on in kids' brains as they're recognizing, they're seeing that contention, and they're saying this contention in their brains, this contention is caused because of the dominant parent.
Too
is
much
what's
saving,
kind of
too
registering.
Much
And so they're going to counteract that on the opposite side. Mm. And so I think we need to be aware of how that's being perceived and received by our kids.
Okay, so we do have some other resources here for you, but Brandon, I almost forgot. Do you have some more numbers for us?
I do, yeah. All right. Yeah, so speaking of wanting to be rich, just kidding. Bloomberg, Knight Frank at Bloomberg did some research, and they said it now takes $5.8 million in wealth to qualify for the top 1% in the United States. And they just pointed out that's actually up 15% from a year ago, they said, which is a dramatic.
5.8 is considered rich?
Top 1%.
Top 1%, okay.
And I've seen a lot of these stats all over the place, and so I probably should dig into this more and figure out, you know, exactly. But
there was one in Utah that I saw just published, and I can't remember the exact dollar amount, but it was the income to be in the top 1% in our home state here in Utah. And it was something like if your income was over, gosh, I want to say it was 450,000 or 500,000, that you're in the top 1% for the state of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah, so usually those have two numbers, an income number and a net worth number.
Right. Is that because there's people who play for the Utah Jazz that just skew that number really high?
Is that I'm sure that goes into it.
I'm sure that does.
But if you're top 1%, right, then I mean, that's taking the lowest of the top highest 1%. You know, that's not an average.
Yeah, I mean, we have, what, 3 million roughly,
right,
in
but the
state.
Average is so high because some people make so much money. That's where it's like, well, you kind of have to – kind of have to cut off the top average and the low. I don't know how, like, what's the mean or whatever.
Well, yeah, so there's still a mean, and there's still the poverty level and things like that. And so the mean, and I haven't seen a number, but if I had to guess, I would guess the mean is probably, you know, 70,000 or 80,000 or something like that in the state. And so that'd be interesting. But
just jumped, actually. I was looking at it the other day. The median, so not the mean, but the median. There's actually quite a difference between those two. But the median was like, it was like 55,000 to 60,000.
Oh, was it really?
Back like a few years ago, and now it's in the 90s.
Okay. Well, so I wasn't too far off on where we're
right
at
on
today.
Yeah. Mm.
So.
Okay, so some other ideas or resources here to get your kids to be smart with money. There's financial books for kids and teens, The Wealthy Barber, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Richest Man in Babylon, and then who's the Tuttle Twins?
The Tuttle Twins.
Yeah,
the Tuttle Twins. So this is a great book series, and I'm not here promoting books, right? But great book series on.
We get paid nothing from the.
I do. So, but they have subjects in these books on just about every topic. The Senate, how does that work? A representative, how does that work? Inflation, how does inflation work? Compounding interest, simple interest, investing. They have, you know, a number of books on virtually any topic. And it's amazing how well explained it is for, you know, it's somebody that's 8 versus somebody that's, you know, I personally think a lot of 30 and 40 and 50 year olds ought to be reading these books as well.
Yeah.
But
well, I remember honestly, was it Ken Jennings, one of the Jeopardy guys who had a long run, said how he knew so much was he would go to the library and read the kids' books.
Yeah, I think that was Ken.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but no, a great series of books that if you're trying to check out, I know a lot of homeschooling families tend to use some of the Tuttle Twin books.
Okay.
But a great series. The Wealthy Barber is another good one. It's more storytelling. That's probably better for your mid-teens kind of age, because it does a good job of explaining pay yourself first, making it automatic. It does an okay job of explaining different kinds of life insurance, term versus permanent, and different pieces. And essentially, it's just talking from, they've got this barber that's a family member, and when they come in and get their haircuts, they kind of get a financial lesson.
Oh, so it's a great idea. We have other podcasts too. I know it's weird, but to reference, just in case, Building a Money Base, Managing Money in Your Teens and 20s is a good one. Also, The Accumulation Phase.
I don't think that one's released yet, but I think it's coming.
So, yeah, look for that one soon.
These are all great podcasts. I mean, they are great. They are the best. They are huge.
Rex listens to each one like 3 times. I do, but I edit them. Rex is just, he needs a bigger library of audio.
I'm just trying to pump up our listening number.
or that. So, all right. Well, that is a wrap on How to Raise Smart Money Kids. You can find... Thank you so much. Actually, I want to say first to Rex and Brandon for being on the podcast. For more information on Rex and Brandon, please visit planwithbaxter.com. That's B-A-X-T-E-R. There's no S in there or anything. It's Baxter, planwithbaxter.com. Also follow us on Facebook, Through the Pines, and on our Instagram. It's Pines_podcast. And that is a wrap for this episode of Through the Pines, reminding you to use yesterday's dollars to finance tomorrow's dreams.